Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined by Josh Bowe. We're coming to you at the latest we've podcasted in quite some time. It's about 11:45 on Wednesday, March 25th. Josh, how are you?
I don't like staying up late. I don't care that this is our first one.
let's be honest. You don't like staying up late to podcast.
That's fair.
You and me are both terrible about actually going to bed sometimes.
That's a good.
It's a different mental lift, though. I know exactly what you mean. Actually, we're working. We do take this seriously. And apparently, so do the freaking Dallas Mavericks, who have absolutely nothing to fucking play for. And night after night after night, they come out and try. And night after night after night, they lose. This time to the Denver Nuggets. This one, I really thought the Mavericks might sneak away with a win. The Nuggets played a hard-fought game in Phoenix last night. I think they stayed in Phoenix. There was something going on, either weather-wise, something weird. And so they barely beat the Suns last night. The Mavericks, you know, are coming off two overtime losses where they're going to be pissed. I was just primed into thinking that the Nuggets were maybe not roll over, but that the Mavericks had something weird happen.
And the Nuggets have also been they're in a funk.
And the Mavericks actually have played the Nuggets pretty fun this year. It's just the Nuggets are obviously a better team, but there's been something within these matchups that make it a pretty good time. The Mavericks obviously lost 142-135, which is a hilarious score for a regular non-overtime game. Sorry, brain's not working. To put into perspective what the Denver Nuggets needed to do to beat the Dallas Mavericks, they needed 53 points from Jamal Murray, and they needed 23 points, 21 rebounds, and 19 assists from Nikola Jokic. The Mavericks threw everything they had at the Nuggets and played a pretty damn good basketball game, at least on the offensive end, and just didn't have it. Just didn't have it. So
Nope. The Nuggets made more threes. That's kind of, you look across the stat line and that's kind of the difference in the game.
Yes.
Both teams got into the paint at will. Both teams scored in the paint at will. This was maybe one of the worst, I mean, either one of the worst combined defensive performances I've seen, or one of the best combined, you know, offensive performances.
I really think it was more
glass defense. Half empty, glass half full, but this was terrible. I don't know. It felt like terrible defense, but, kind of more of an indictment on the Nuggets, because again, the Mavericks are now 23-50, and the Nuggets are supposed to be competing for a title, and they can't put this team away. But the Mavericks, you know, I'm running out of things to say. It's every game they play hard, they drive the ball like maniacs, they get to the rim, they can score, but then they can't shoot. I'm actually shocked that they lost. They only had four turnovers tonight. That's usually one of the recession indicators for the Mavericks is turnover. Like, the fact that they lost a game with only four turnovers is kind of shocking considering how this season has gone.
Well, let me see this, because Panda Hank said, okay, the Mavs are the first NBA team to not commit any turnovers in the first half since January 25th. Across the league. So that's an interesting sort of side note there. That was a shout out to Panda Hank for noticing that on the Denver broadcast, because I wasn't listening to either broadcast. I just kind of had the game up and was watching this one. You know, I do think that the turnovers thing is, if we're going to focus on a positive, I really do think we should focus on that positive, because the Mavericks had 23 turnovers in the last game, 15 between Najee and Cooper, and tonight Najee had one and Cooper had zero. I went on a little riff just midday yesterday. I was just sort of thinking out loud about this. For anybody who was actually paying attention to our podcast way back in May of 2025, so the Mavericks win the lottery, I had on my friend Jay Kyleman from The Ringer, who is, you know, kind of their head draft guy. And in that 20-minute pod, he explained at length that what makes Cooper such a fascinating prospect is the mental element to his game, how he processes basketball, and really how he adapts within both the game and the season. You know, he sort of cited Duke the first half of the year, where he maybe had an injury that nobody knew about. and looked not explosive and didn't, and all of a sudden, like, he turns the corner right after Christmas and never really looked back and really locked in that number one pick status. I don't necessarily think he's had quite such a linear path in the NBA, but to go from having a game where you have seven really bad turnovers to a game where you have none, and the level of ball control that he had, I don't think he had the ball quite as much because Brandon Williams came back. Him and Ryan Nemhard played more point guard minutes tonight. And then that other little guard, Tyler Smith, got some minutes. But it's just, if you're looking for things to take away, elements of improvement for, or change, like not making the same mistake two games in a row is, I think, how I'm going to think about this, where he's not, you know, there are going to be turnover prone games for Flag and for, you know, any ball handler where it just happens, but to bounce back and put on just a really, it's a great Cooper game. I mean, really good Cooper.
Yeah. One of his, I'm honestly, you could argue offensively one of his better games of the season, mm-hmm. outside of maybe some of those huge explosion nights he's had, like the 40 point games.
Yeah.
Defensively was rough. He did have some splash defensive plays, but you know, everyone was rough defensively, so no use in focusing on that right now. But yeah, like I said, his passing, that's the thing that has been impressing me every game after game after game, even with the high turnovers he's had in the last previous games before this one. But he is so far ahead passing, I thought, that he would be at this point of the season, because I thought that would just be such a struggle for him. Honestly, I thought that would be more of a struggle for him than the shooting. Like, I thought he would struggle with the playmaking and the ball handling a little bit more than the shooting. And it's kind of been the other way around. He just sees the floor very well. And he sees the floor very well playing in lineups that are not optimized for him to see the floor well, to put it bluntly.
Maybe, I mean,
he's playing so many minutes with Najee and PJ Washington in a big. So you're basically saying, you know, he's only playing with one other when he has the ball in his hands. There's, for the most part, when he's on the floor, there's only one other shooter. And, you know, Max Christie or Clay, maybe they bring in a point guard. So, even then, their point guards haven't been great shooters. Like Brandon Williams can't make a three to save his life. So, like, I mean, like, the fact that he is passing and finding passing lanes and avenues with the floor spacing that he's kind of been thrust with. I don't know if it's deliberate. I don't know if it's like deliberate, like in terms of like, hey, this is kind of like secret tank. Let's put Cooper with a bunch of non-shooters to limit his opportunities. I don't know what's happening there, but it feels deliberate. I don't know if it's like kid wants Cooper to play on hard mode. It's crazy.
This is organizational.
Tech. Yeah.
I mean, this is crazy. What it is in a nutshell. There was a Twitter user I've interacted a lot with at Sir Lofen. About an hour ago, so we're talking third quarter, says kid doesn't play Cooper with Clay and Chris, but plays him with Najee, PJ, and Christie for most of his minutes. And that's exactly what you just said, but it's a statement of fact where what happens if you open up, because the Mavericks do have a little more shooting than they play regularly. It's not like you're going to roll out a lineup with Clay, Chris Middleton, Max Christie, Cooper. Actually, no, now that I'm saying that out loud, why the hell wouldn't you?
Why not? They've already tried PJ at the five. They clearly are okay with trying stuff.
That's that lineup right there. Let's throw PJ out there too. That's a lineup where everybody's 6'5 to 6'9. Like, that's a modern basketball lineup. Why don't you try that? I think we know the answer. I think there's an hard mode element to it. I also think that kid knows that there's some organizational decisions being made here, and we're not like, we got like 8 games left. I'm not gonna bitch about it too loudly. But to emphasize your point, which is about Cooper's just sort of evolution in this element of his game. You know, we're 71 games, 72 games into the season. I have 73. I have no idea how many. And what I still can't tell you what the hell Cooper Flag is going to be. I have no earthly idea. And I've been thinking about that over the course of this game. We can be honest with everybody here. If you're still watching this, you're a diehard. And we're just trying to get to the end of the season. Like, there's it's just kind of the nature of basketball when it gets like this, when you're on a quasi tanking team, we're just trying to make it through the end. And I hadn't really stepped back and thought about what Cooper could be And you know, I'm probably going to save that for the off season. But the fact that I don't have like an idea yet is really neat. Like, I had ideas about Luka by this point in his rookie year. I had a very firm opinion of Dennis Smith Jr. I knew exactly what I fucking thought about Josh Green. Like, probably not fair, but whatever. And it's just so interesting because I think how he chooses to develop his game, you know, where the Mavericks go with the draft, where he chooses to spend time this offseason, how they choose to build around Flag, it's really neat. It's having so many options, I think, is what makes this part of building a team and like hopefully rising back up the rankings at some point. It's supposed to be the fun part where you can really kind of, you know, project out. But I, at the moment, I'm just like, I don't know what the heck he's going to be. I mean, he 26-8-7 for a rookie. The Mavs PR said it's the seventh 25-5-5 game for him, which is more than the rest of the rookie class combined.
Yeah, he's making it look pretty regular. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see his shooting, his efficiency improve. I think he's feeling comfortable after those first couple of games after the foot injury. But yeah, like going back to the hard mode, like I just looked it up now because I needed to know. Cooper at point guard, the Mavs offense scores 104.6 per 100 possessions, which is awful. The main lineup with Coop at point is the one that they've been running lately post trade deadline. Cooper, Christie, Najee, PJ, Gafford. They didn't play that lineup tonight because Gafford didn't play. They played the same lineup but with Powell.
Yeah.
So that lineup, 106 per 100 possessions, again awful. And then Cooper at the two guard, team scores 113 per 100 possessions, and then Cooper at small forward scores 118 per 100 possessions. So, and again, it comes back to like, what are they playing for? Like, I get it. Like, they need to do this because when else are you going to do it? You know, because eventually, you know, he needs these possessions. I think it's ultimately helpful.
Yes.
For him to do this. And they're not, you know, they're not trying to win games, so it doesn't really matter. But if you look at the, like, he's played almost over about half of his possessions, it looks like, at point guard. Like, I just wonder if if it's skewed a little bit too much, like they're just kind of rolling that out. But again, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. They can, because they're trying to lose. Fine. It's more just our person. We talked about this the other day.
Kid will ultimately be proven right about doing this, but it's like, that doesn't mean it
sucks to watch in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
We talked about this in the last pod. Like we know it's fine, but it, you know, we're in terms of just pure entertainment value, it is difficult to watch at times where he's trying to make what you like to say, chicken. He's trying to make chicken salad out of chicken shit. Like, it feels like half of his possessions every game. And it's like, why? But then you realize why. It's because, you know, adversity builds character. You know, this is the time for him to learn, because you want to get out the growing pains now, so that in 2 years, when, you know, 2 or 3 years, when they're in a playoff series in the fourth quarter and he has a ball in his hands and he needs to create, and it's like, oh yeah, I've been doing this. This is nothing. Like, I know how to do this. So it all makes sense. This is not like a tactical coaching criticism necessarily. I'm looking forward to when the majority of Cooper's minutes are not a point guard. Just, that'll be fun to see.
Really fun. All right. We're at about the halfway point, maybe further. Who knows? Thanks so much for listening to the show here. There are three ways to support. The first is listening to the ads. That's the way Josh and I get paid. Though maybe not so much this last quarter of the season because nobody's listening. The second way is by telling your friends, grow the show. I know you guys got a lot of options and listening to things after, you know, after games. There's 3 to 4 other shows that do things, maybe some degree at different levels of production than Josh and I are really capable of out of our homes. But we are grateful for those of you who are here. So tell your friends. The third way is there are a couple of links in the show notes if you're feeling generous, but I don't expect that from anybody, of course. We'll be right back, and we'll close out the show with any other things we want to talk about. Okay, we're back. I'll do secondary shows again at one point. I really like doing those, but like you can tell there's just not that many people in here. So if there's not, I'm not going to hang out and talk and try to make it. And you know, I think some folks will come back as we get in our postseason shows, maybe, and particularly if, you know, closer to the lottery and between lottery and draft. So we'll be, you know, talking to plenty of people there. Actually, it was very funny. Friend of the show, and I will tease him about this. Kind of, we'll just call him a lapsed Mavericks fan. And Jason Gallagher was like, "Hey, you've not had me on in a while. I got some Mav stuff I want to talk about." And I was like, "Okay, Oklahoma City Thunder fan, maybe I'll let you come on the show. Maybe we'll see." Like he somehow was on the Pacers broadcast tonight. The Pacers had him do like a 4-minute soliloquy on why Luka Doncic should be on all first team NBA. Because there's like make no mistake, I do miss Luka Doncic playing. I don't miss having to be in the trenches about the Luka Doncic arguments. Like I had somebody tell me the other night that I wasn't a Luka fan, and it's just like, no, I've been a fan of Luka longer than most NBA fans, just because I paid attention to the stuff. But I'm not willing. I don't have any interest in fighting and dying on that hill. That said, he's played some pretty ridiculous basketball the last 3 weeks, and wow, just good at the sport.
No, yeah, I was thinking the other day, like, not to talk about Luka because people really hate that we still talk about.
We Luka, haven't done it in a long time.
No, I know. I would just say that it's really nice, regardless of how you feel about Luka, whether you hate him, whether you're glad he was traded, whether you never want to watch the Mavs again, mm-hmm. you'll never forgive the team, all across the spectrum of emotions. I think it's just nice to see him playing well and looking like himself, because about a month or two ago, there was real thoughts in my head where I was like, did that trade ruin his career? Because like
10 good games to start the season. Yeah.
Just didn't look like himself since he's been traded, obviously, you know, and like he wears his emotions on his sleeve. Like you could tell he was unhappy with it all. And then, you know, not even to bring up all the stuff that's happening in his personal life. And I was just like, it was just like, he's entering the years of his career where he should be competing for a title every season. Like he's what, 27, 28. Like this is it. These are, you know, this is when MJ won a title, LeBron won a title, Giannis won a title. This is when the all-time greats start, you know, putting together, you know, their championship pedigree and stuff. And I was like, did his career, like, it was like, is he going to even, you know, he was making first team all NBA, like it was nothing. And now, like, you know, 2 months ago, it was like, is he even going to be, you know, on the ballot for some of this stuff? You know, like, it felt like his career got nuked. Like it would never be the same again. And now he looks like Luka, and you know, he's going to be a lock for the
Lakers team is not good. Yeah. Like, it's just so funny.
Yeah. The Lakers aren't good either. That was another thing. Like, is he going to spend another 3 years waiting for something to happen for the team to be better again? Like he did in Dallas.
It's just so wonderful to not have to, like, when I heard like Jason Wilbon make his very, like, just like Wilbon's criticisms of Luka border on uncomfortable. Like that, it's the sort of thing I'm glad we just don't have to battle with anymore. He's a very good basketball player, and I will enjoy watching the playoffs with him be a part of it. But we're on to our different things. So looking at the numbers from this game, it's, I don't know, it feels kind of ridiculous the Mavericks lost. Like
it's weird. I mean, they can't guard. I mean, how many guards, point guards, shooting guards, how many guards have like had career nights against Dallas this season? And then you look at their lineup and it's like, I mean, who's going to guard them? Like they play a bunch of forwards and centers, and the only guards they play are Max Christie, Klay Thompson, Ryan Nimhard, Brandon Williams. It's like, okay, those guys aren't guarding anyone really. They have zero guard defense right now, and it's wild.
We've sort of, this has been the real challenge during some of these streaks where it's like their defensive principles come across, like just come open at the seams sometimes. Now, Kidd has always been fine with his teams giving up 3-point shooting, and there are just games.
They'd rather protect the rim. Yeah.
And this is just a game where they got absolutely exposed. And, you know, you pair that with, if there's no Daniel Gafford, and obviously no Anthony Davis, no Derek Lively, you're also just asking Nikola Jokic to try weird shit. And he just, he has those touch passes in his arsenal where he gets it between, let's just say, the like two steps inside the 3-point line at the top of the key, maybe to like the first peg down, where if you get him the ball, he like teleports it to either the corner or to somebody cutting along the baseline. And the Mavericks just can't defend that stuff. Now, very few teams can defend that stuff very well. It's not a Mavericks-based criticism, but you pair that with the open, with like the hot 3-point shooting, and that's effectively how they lost. But it's just kind of frustrating because it's like, oh, this is a nice PJ game, you know, for PJ. Weird season for him, definitely, you know, and the Mavericks just don't have enough, and it's, that's obvious because they've only won, you know, 20 games or however many, but I just, you know, Bobby Corrala, DLS Sports, says the Mavericks need to make point of attack defense a priority. And it's like, I honestly can't remember the last time the Mavericks, I guess it's PJ within the structure of the defense in 2024 before they went to the finals. But before that, the Mavericks had, when was the last time the Mavericks had a good point of attack defender, period? Like Rajah Bell, like in 2006? Like I can't really think of the last, because like Dorian Finney-Smith got shoved in that role. He wasn't a good point of attack defender. He was.
Yeah, I mean, it was maybe Derrick Jones Jr.
Yeah, yeah, okay. You know. Yeah, in the finals.
But, that's, you know, a good, that's one season.
No, but that's a good example. And it's like, yeah, like you sort of got to think, you know, you start thinking ahead to the draft. And obviously, you know, the lottery luck is going to play the biggest portion here. But when I see this sort of thing, it's why I sort of balk at the concept of any of the smaller point guards in the draft lottery right now. I know everyone's favorite person, reasonably so, because he's an excellent scoring guard, Darius Acuff Jr. I saw an ad with him and Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson is 5'10". He was an inch and a half taller than Allen Iverson. Like, I keep revising how tall I think Acuff actually is downward, based off of the things I'm seeing. It's just like you can't, that against these teams. I mean, Jamal Murray is a big, he's a reasonably sized guard. He's a 6'4" guard with great lift on his jump shot. It's like you gotta have people to guard guys like that. There's just like the best teams all have somebody that can make these kind of shots, and you need to be able to have someone in your Derrick Jones Jr., your Lou Dortz, like you're like a mold of defender that can play, that can hit enough shots on offense. Like the Mavericks just need, obviously they need a lot of things, but that like they're just, nights like tonight is when it stands out.
No, absolutely, they don't. There's zero resistance on the point of attack. And obviously you can get around that if you've got size in a back line, but the Mavericks, you know, PJ and Cooper are okay, weak side rim defenders, but you know, you're playing Dwight, when you're playing Dwight Powell at center, and then your guard defense is Max Christie and Ryan Nimhard and Brandon Williams. It's like, good fucking luck. Like they just don't have anyone I could stay in front of guys nope. on the perimeter. It's tough.
Nope. I really didn't have anything else. The Mavericks closed it. The Mavericks closed it really nicely at the, like, I don't know, it's kind of the, like the 3-2.5 minute mark of the third quarter. And then Denver just promptly shut the door. The Mavericks did the exact same thing to make it a clutch time game again. And then Denver just, we're like, oh yeah, we're gonna win. I mean, what is the clutch? I don't even know if that gets updated until tomorrow, but just a preposterous number of clutch games and clutch losses.
No, yeah, they've played, entering tonight, they were leading the league in clutch games with 41. Houston was second with 40, tied with Portland with 40. And I think both teams, Houston and the Mavs, both played a clutch game. So the Mavs are at, I think, 42 clutch games now, and they're 15 and 27. So yeah.
So they have, so if I'm doing my math right, they have 15. So they have 8 non-clutch wins the entire season. I don't know. That's not that bad considering how bad they were. They actually are.
Yeah, but the 41 clutch games is just, that's hilarious. Over, I mean, they are officially over half their season is clutch games, and we'll see where they go from there.
Still got plenty of time because they play. Yeah. So it's like, what is the schedule ahead? Because I was trying to plan ahead for my weekend, and I have a sneaky feeling we have a Friday back to back or Friday Saturday back to back, which would. No, we don't. Wonderful. All right. So the Mavs play Friday in Portland. That's a late game, and then they don't play again. They have a back to back Monday, Tuesday. We don't have any more weekend back to backs. That's lovely. You and I, we deserve this. We do have a number. We still have 3 9 o'clock or later start times, which is funny. But that's, you know, that's a good one. I don't have anything else. I have like really nothing else.
I have nothing else either. Yeah. It's okay. I mean, it was a fun game. Like what
I did. Know. No, I do think I should. I did a Josh thing. We should tell the audience. I did go see Project Hail Mary at the True IMAX.
Oh yeah. There. I haven't talked to you since you did that. Did you like it?
Dope experience. I really enjoyed listening to the projector guy come out and explain everything before mm-hmm. the movie. That was
yeah,
really cool.
They do that every time. Yeah.
It was great. Fun. It was great listening to that and gave my son a sense of scope. Really, I could see why people wanted to see what was the last big movie that was during the weekend of Barbie and was the other one?
Oppenheimer.
I can see why people wanted to see Oppenheimer on it. Like, though I wouldn't have needed to see like 5-story tall Robert Downey Jr. for a third of the movie, but like the elements of that, it's a fun movie. It remind, you know, I think that what I want to say is like overhyped is wrong. I have a value of like certain movies like Apollo 13 and some movies that I saw when I was a kid that I have like great attachment to, largely because we had fewer things to fucking do 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And now it's just like you get out of the theater and you're faced with all this other content. You can go do other things. You can move on. So I really liked Project Hail Mary. The practical effects in the movie, if you know that they're practical and like a lot of the movie effects are practical, kind of makes you go, holy shit, this is awesome filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And then the additional visual stuff was really neat. It just is a fun movie. I recommend it to anybody. This is a silly criticism. My only actual criticism is this feels like a mid-July movie that they put out in March. Like this would have been great to go escape 110 degree Texas heat from. Just for, you know, I love going to the movies when it's 1,000 degrees. So
I'm with you. Well, that's fine. I'm going on Saturday.
I will tell you this. There was like a 4-minute preview for, the Odyssey, and my son, who is like huge into, Greek mythology. He sits there and then he turns to me and he goes, eh. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? This was like, and granted, because he's 9, he doesn't know, but it's like, what, James, what they were able to do, what it looks like they're trying to do in this movie is like massive, like Lawrence of Arabia type filmmaking, yes. Like yes. Really crazy stuff. Yep. So
cool.
Anyway, thanks so much for letting me ramble about that. I will talk with you Friday, I guess. Everybody be good. Go Mavs.